Welcome to Budget Insights, where we explore the dynamics of India's economic changes. I'm Pallavi, your host for today. We're joined by Sonu Iyer, tax partner at EY India. With over 30 years of experience in tax advisory and policy analysis, Sonu brings a wealth of knowledge in individual taxation as well as regulatory compliance. Let us find out about the budget proposals that will impact individual taxpayers. Sonu, thank you for joining us in this episode. It's great to have you here again, and we look forward for your insights on how budget changes will affect our listeners' personal finance.
Many thanks, Pallavi. It's my pleasure to be back again with you for discussion on the budget proposals that impact individual taxation and personal finance.
Thank you, Sonu. To start off, could you please outline the key changes in the new tax regime and how the new tax slabs will affect individuals' financial planning? In addition to that, could you also discuss the benefits and long-term effects of the increased standard deduction on personal spending and savings?
Thanks, Pallavi. So I think when we were talking about expectations from the budget, one of the things we were talking about that the finance minister has to think of some ways and means to put more personal disposable income in the hands of the taxpayers. We need more money in the hands of people to be able to, you know, spend, invest and save to keep the economy and the macroeconomic, markers in shape. There were expectations that there would be an increase in the maximum amount exempt from tax in the new tax regime. Well, that may not have happened, but what has happened? Let's talk about that. So there is a widening of slabs that has happened in the new tax regime. And all of these measures are being done to make the new tax regime more attractive. So when I talk about widening of tax slab, what we've seen is whilst the first slab that is up to 3 lakhs, there is no tax, as is in the current tax regime, and in the new proposed tax regime also there is no change. But the slabs that then follow, 3 to 7 lakhs, has become wider. It was earlier 3 to 6 lakhs, now it's 3 to 7 lakhs, and the tax rate is 5%. So the cascade impact is that there is a increase in 1 lakh of every slab that follows. So if I were to call out 0 to 3 lakhs, nil, 3 to 7 lakhs, 5%, 7 to 10 lakhs, 10%, 10 to 12 lakhs, 15%, 12 to 15 lakhs slab at 20%, and above 15 lakhs is 30%. So net impact of this slab would mean that someone who has, say, income over in the range of 15 lakhs, 75,000, etc., they will be saving close to 17,500, before adding on cess and surcharge impact. So there is more money ultimately in the hands of the taxpayers because of the widening of the tax slabs. An expected change for salary income earners, standard deduction has gone up from 50,000 to 75,000 rupees, which means a resident salary income taxpayer effectively can, you know, have income up to 7,75,000 rupees and pay no tax because of the tax rebate of 25,000 plus the increase in standard deduction. So salary income taxpayers up till 7,75,000, total income of 7,75,000 will not pay any tax. On the standard deduction, the finance minister has kept in mind also the retired employee who are getting pension. So in that case, the family pension standard deduction is increased from 15,000 to 25,000. So that's the change in the tax slab, as well as the increase in the standard deduction. And as I said, this means more money in the hands of the individual taxpayers, and this will have its own cascade impact in being able to spend more and save more.
Thank you, Sonu. Now, pivoting towards the capital gains, the budget has brought immediate changes to the taxation of long-term and short-term capital gains. How do you believe that this will affect investors, and what should they be aware of in light of these changes?
Thanks, Pallavi. That's a big one. So we did expect some sort of overhauling of capital gains tax regime because of the fact that in the current capital gains tax regime, we see variances in holding periods, various treatment for tax rate purposes, So that was much needed and much expected, but some surprises have also come up. Let's talk about what is changing. First, on the holding period. In the current law, we have holding periods varying from 12 months for listed equity shares and equity-oriented mutual funds, units of a business trust. We have a period of 24 months for assets like immovable property, for unlisted equity shares. For assets like gold, etc., the holding period is 36 months for these assets to qualify as long-term capital gains. Now, what has been done, which is a very welcome move, there is rationalization. So you have a holding period of 12 months in case of listed securities and equity-oriented mutual funds and units of a business trust, and a period of 24 months as holding period for all other assets. So at least consistency, stability, clarity, simplification is very welcome. Now let's look at the changes in terms of rate of tax applicable. So listed securities or listed equity shares or equity units of an equity-oriented mutual fund, if the holding period is less than 12 months, currently the tax rate that is applicable on these short-term capital gains is 15%. Now, what is being proposed in the budget is a hike of 5%, which means that the short-term capital gains tax rate applicable on sale of equity shares, units of equity-oriented mutual funds, and units of business trusts, which are held for less than 12 months, will now be taxed at 20%. So, some of the benefit of the widening of the slab and the revenue loss is being sought to be mitigated through the hike in the tax rate for short-term capital gains. Of course, the justification we've heard from the government and post-budget conferences is that typically it was the high-net-worth individuals who were benefiting from this favorable regime for short-term capital gains tax, and therefore it should not have a far-reaching impact. Then we see, and of course, all other short-term capital gains, as is the case today, will continue to be taxed at the slab rates. Then moving on to a big change, we are talking about long-term capital gains now. Long-term capital gains tax currently varies from 10% to 20%. Now, under the new regime, what is being proposed is all long-term capital gains will be taxed at 12.5%. So it does mean that long-term capital gains in case of sale of equity shares or equity-oriented mutual funds and etc., which were currently taxed at 10%, effective 23rd July 2024, will now be taxed at 12.5%, although there is a marginal increase in the threshold exemption, which today stands at 1 lakh rupees. That will now be increased to 1.25 lakh rupees. So that threshold exemption has gone up, but the rate of tax has gone up from 10 to 12.5%. The rate of 12.5% will also apply on sale of immovable property, sale of gold, or any other asset. So that rate will be consistently applied. So to that extent, the consistency in the rate of tax is very welcome. We've talked about changes in the holding period. We've spoken about changes in the tax rates for both short-term capital gains and long-term capital gains. One big change which has come as a surprise is the withdrawal of indexation benefit. Now, what is indexation? Indexation is typically adjustment in the cost to factor in the increase in the cost because of inflation. So it is an inflationary adjustment that is made to a cost of acquisition. So that benefit typically used to be useful for people who have acquired assets long ago. Then the cost could be made current to present day by adjusting for inflationary factor. And in fact, the Income Tax Department releases a cost of inflation index every year for a taxpayer to utilize and be able to index the cost to the current day time. Now, this withdrawal of indexation will have consequences, especially if you're selling property. And if you're selling property which you may have acquired long ago, now, depending on each specific fact pattern, you will see that the loss of this indexation benefit may result in higher capital gains. And we'll talk more about it later. But This is a major change in the capital gains tax regime, that indexation benefit is withdrawn. For those of you who want to know where all the indexation benefit was available, it was available in case of property, as I told you. It was for gold also, you could index it to the cost of acquisition. It was available in case of unlisted shares. It was available for debt-oriented mutual funds that were acquired prior to April 23. I guess the only place it was, where we thought it was not available was in case of equity shares, listed equity shares. It was not available for bonds and debentures. And for capital gains tax that the non-residents had to pay if they were using the concessional rate of 10%. So this will have to be seen on each individual fact pattern, whether the loss of indexation benefit is offset by the fact of long-term capital gains tax rate having come down in some cases, some categories of assets from 20% to 12.5%. So that's from a perspective of what changes have been made to the capital gains tax regime. These are the changes. Now, how this will impact an investor? So I firmly believe that typically an investor going into the market is doing so to be able to gain from the increase in the value of the investments, right? Tax is incidental. So I don't see this impacting the investors in the long term. We've already got used to the idea of 10% long-term capital gains on sale of equity shares. Prior to that, it was zero. So the fact is that migration has already happened. So this 10 to 12.5% should not have a mega impact. But I think the ask would be that this should mean that we are now set for stable income tax rates as far as long-term capital gains tax regime is concerned. And specifically, given that there is a review of Income Tax Act that is coming up, I hope there's no further tinkering with the rates. I think from a stability standpoint, which the finance minister is seeking to bring in through the budget, we should see these rates prevail for a long period of time.
Thank you, Sonu. In this year's budget, there's been a significant shift regarding the indexation benefit on the sale of immovable property. Could you explain how the removal of indexation benefits will impact individuals who are selling their property?
Yeah, we just spoke about it, Pallavi, but just to capsulate from a perspective specifically on this question on sale of immovable property, first is the rate of tax is changing. From 20%, if the property has been held for more than 2 years, the rate of tax applicable under current law is 20%. This is now going to be 12.5%. And we talked about the fact that withdrawal of indexation benefit can mean that what was previously likely to result in a capital loss is actually turning out to be capital gains. But this will be specific to each individual in terms of the cost of asset, when was the asset purchased. And an important clarification, which is also needs to be kept in mind, is that for assets that were, if a removable property was acquired prior to April 2001, you still have the ability to choose the fair market value as on 1st April 2001 or cost of acquisition, whichever is higher. So that will be considered as the cost of acquisition. So to that extent, the indexation benefit up till 1st April 2001 is protected and will still be available. We are talking about the loss of inflation index really after 2001. So 1st April 2001 to the date of transaction, that will be the loss of indexation benefit. But again, it'll be fact specific and you'll have to do the calculation. But I also want to talk about what one needs to keep in mind. That because there is no indexation benefit available when you compute your long-term capital gains on sale of an immovable property, you'll have to be able to invest the absolute amount of capital gains to be able to get benefit of Section 54, like where capital gains are to be invested in purchase of a residential property. Earlier, you were getting the benefit of having to invest only the indexed capital gains computed after indexation for getting the tax benefit. Now, one will have to invest the total amount of capital gains, which is the sale consideration minus the cost of acquisition as is. And that will also be, you'll have to be careful also of the overall cap of 10 crores that is there in case of Section 54. For Section 54 EC, there is an overall cap of 50 lakhs that you'll have to be mindful of. So the capital gains in terms of the amount to be invested to get these benefits have to be looked at carefully because you're no longer getting the benefit of indexation. So that was what I wanted to be able to, maybe add on to the earlier response on indexation benefits not being available on sale of immovable property.
Moving on, the proposed increase in securities transaction tax rate has been a topic of much discussion. Could you discuss the rationale behind this decision as presented in the budget and its potential impact on the capital markets?
Right. So the fact is that we all know about the buoyancy in the stock exchanges, and I think the finance minister is very clearly looking to offset some of the revenue loss for various outlays that are being made in the schemes for development and employment generation through the hike in the securities transaction tax. And interestingly, the economic survey that came a day before the budget proposals also talked about the fact that we are seeing, in the retail investors getting very actively into the derivatives market. In fact, very clearly, they said we need to be able to save such young investors that they should not be incurring loss and be put off the market forever, and that will be a loss to the economy as well as, from a fact that they will not like to continue on stock exchanges because they would have incurred losses. And for this, they are citing global experience on dealing in derivatives market, etc. So that, I think, gave us an indication that something was coming on futures and options. So we've seen a hike in the securities transaction tax for futures and options. So it is proposed to increase the rate of securities transaction tax on sale of an option in securities from the current 0.0625% to 0.1% of the option premium. And on sale of futures in securities from 0.0125% to 0.02% of the price at which futures are traded. Now, it may seem decimal here and there, but this will mean a significant collection given the current volume of transactions that we are seeing. So if it is intended to offset some revenue loss, this is a good source of additional revenue for the government. If it is also intended, based on the economic survey, to influence behavior of investors and to, discourage them from getting active on futures and options, that also possibly that purpose can be served. So I think the STT is a safe way for the government to have collected additional tax and also influence behavior of retail investors getting into the derivatives market.
Thank you, Sonu. Share buybacks were mentioned in the budget speech. Could you clarify for our listeners what a share buyback is and why companies might opt for it? And also discuss the implications of new budget provisions on share buybacks for both companies and shareholders.
So I think the budget proposal really is sort of plugging a gap, what they see as an anti-avoidance, measure. If you look at, share buybacks, typically this is a method for the company to distribute its, accumulated reserves. It is very similar to dividends. And the government is actually calling that out and saying that if it is similar to dividend, then it should be treated in the same manner from an equity standpoint. And to that extent, what they're doing now is, and this will effectively mean that currently, when the share buyback transaction was happening, the company was paying tax on the buyback of shares from the shareholders at some 20%, whilst the recipient of the income for transfer of these shares was not paying anything at all. If the government is looking at it from an equity standpoint, anyone who is getting income on sale of shares or getting any form of dividend, they would pay tax. So effectively, this is what is being sought to be plugged. So, and in fact, when you hear the budget speech and you hear talk about it, they're very clearly calling out that seems to be the right thing to do. So what is now being proposed is that any sum which is going to be paid by a domestic company for purchase of its own shares It'll be treated as dividend in the hands of shareholders who have received payment from such buyback of shares and shall be chargeable to income tax at the regular slab rates. There is no deduction for expenses that will be available against this dividend income. So there'll be no cost of acquisition per se. It is deemed dividend and no expense deduction, no cost of acquisition index. The cost of acquisition will really be treated like a capital loss, which will then be offset against any capital gains on sale of these shares in the future. So there's this share buyback is, I don't think we'll see many more transactions on share buyback. Effectively, that is completely plugged with this.
Thank you, Sonu. The finance minister also outlined the changes in the tax collected at source regime. If you can also please elaborate on these changes and discuss the impact these divisions will have on the business environment as well as the taxation process for various stakeholders.
Okay, tax collected at source, one of the big asks of people and typically salary income earners was that, the TCS that they may have had been subjected to for remittances overseas, that needs to be offset against the tax withholding that is being done on payment of salary to them. So the government has actually relented and now TCS suffered by its salary income earners can be offset against the withholding tax. This will particularly be beneficial for expatriate employees working in India who are remitting their salary and on remittance they were suffering a TCS. Now that TCS collected on remittances by the bank can be used to offset withholding tax liability on salary for such people. So that's a good measure. There is also introduction of TCS on purchase of luxury goods. Again, in a way, government's principle of trying to create equity is saying if there are a lot of high net worth individuals that are spending a lot of money on luxury, so for that, any purchase of 10 lakhs or more will be subject to a 1% TCS. So that's on tax collection at source, which is actually against, it's adjustable against the total tax liability of the individual. But typically, the individual would have to wait until filing the tax return to be able to offset the tax collected at source. This obviously will also lead to widening of the tax base when you're introducing TCS on various transactions. And in a way, the government is also sort of amplifying the message that we are tracking all expenditure. So, HNIs were spending money. This is being tracked by the government, and now 1% TCS, in line with TCS that was introduced earlier on foreign travel, international credit cards, etc., which was international credit card was in fact rolled back, but on any preloaded foreign exchange currency card. So I think we'll see more of it. It is in a way that for some time we will see TCS coming in on more and more transactions. And once the government has established the tax base, we will see this getting more and more rationalized. That's on TCS, Pallavi.
Thank you, Sonu. Before we let you go, we're eager to hear your summary on tax rationalization measures introduced by the finance minister's budget speech. Could you explain the resolution framework designed to streamline the tax disputes? And also, what impact do you foresee with the Vivad Se Vishwas initiative having on resolving pending tax cases?
Yeah, Pallavi. So I think the finance minister's opening lines as she tabled the direct tax proposals, simplify tax, and I think very much clear from the proposals that she put forth in terms of dispute resolution. So we are seeing provisions around, time limit for issuance of notice for reassessment. That's a welcome change. They're bringing it down to 3 years and also setting a monetary limit for, initiating reassessment. There is introduction of Vivad Se Vishwas scheme, which is the dispute resolution scheme that been looking at the pendency of cases. Government is bringing in a Vivad Se Vishwas scheme, which will for be dispute resolution for matters pending before them. And I think the biggest change is also in terms of a comprehensive review of the current Income Tax Act, which over the years, because of amendments, etc., has become very cumbersome. So, and there is an end date also specified that within the next 6 months, we should have done a comprehensive review of the Income Tax Act. There is the rationalization of TDS rates, which is welcome. So to that extent, I'd say even the rationalization of the capital gains tax regime, the rationalization of TDS, the fact of credit of TCS being permitted against to offset withholding tax liability, time limit for issuance of notices, all of these, and of course, as I said, the comprehensive review. These are all good rationalization measures that will really be able to help achieve the objective of stability, predictability, and simplification of our tax regime.
Thank you, Sonu. On that note, we come to the end of this conversation. Thank you once again for joining us and sharing all your post-budget insights, impact on individuals and personal finance.
Many thanks, Pallavi, for having me.
Thank you. Thank you to all our listeners for joining us on the Budget Insights. We hope this episode has shed light on the new income tax regime and its implications for you. For more insights and expert advice, stay tuned to our series. Until next time, keep your finances in check and your future secure.